Stephen Dill here.
Hello.
Welcome to the Land Investor Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about how market data removes the risk from real estate acquisitions. It's one of my favorite topics. And as you may not know, this is Data Week here at the Land Investor Show.
Sorry. I love the Data Week. I'm going to walk in and make sure that everybody around knows Data Week, Data Week, Data Week. It's every week is Data Week, Jack. Why is this week different?
We just talk about it a lot more, which makes me really happy this week. But you're right. Our whole life is packed data. Full of data.
You know, that's so funny. Everything we do is data.
That's why these are
easy. You stand in the grocery store and you know what? Let me share this about you, please.
No.
You stand in the grocery store and analyze the cost of meat prices based on comps and if we should buy the meat there.
Data? As a price per unit, you know, like per ounce or per pound or however they have it in there.
We were at the gas station and you were telling me what gas to put in my car and where to go based on data.
You know, until recently, I thought everybody did that.
I know. No, they don't.
Every once in a while, there's a guy in a grocery store, and he's doing the same thing, you know, we look at each other and kind of laugh like, yep, you have the same problem.
Yep. You know what the good news is? There's a few places like Costco Jewelry that it already passes your test. So yeah, that's really good. Remember the other day I said, meet me at the jewelry counter.
You know, you don't buy jewelry per price unit. You buy it all on emotion.
Yeah, but if it's,
and you know why I don't feel bad about that?
You're happy with that.
I don't feel bad about that at all, and I don't even look at the price. If there's something that you want when it comes to jewelry, because everything else in my life, it's already locked down.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, splurging on that, and it makes you happy, the dividends pay huge.
Thank you. Can we please go shopping after the show?
We'll see how the show goes.
Okay.
Before we get into the topic today, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the landinvestors.com online community. It's free.
Okay. Neil asks, how does one tactfully back out of signed return offers on properties you do not wish to buy? Should I call them this is so good. Call them speaking in a foreign language and hope they hang up. Send them a Starbucks gift card.
Who would not do that?
Convince them they'll make more money if they sell it on Craigslist themselves. Thank you. Oh, Neil.
Jill's an expert at this.
Awesome.
Good question.
This is so awesome. You know what's really interesting about this question is I'm about to do it right now. I think I might do it on a house because we sent out an offer. I'm going to share some numbers.
Sure.
And our offer price was $356,000. And it came in yesterday, and I'm getting excited. The guy's happy with the offer. It was my first indication. You probably found this too, Neil, that sometimes if your offer's really good and a lot of people call you right back, you might think, uh-oh, did I overprice this batch? Because that happens, especially when you're new. So anyway, this offer came back, and I'm getting excited, but then afterwards, I'm pulling up some numbers. I'm talking to you. I talked to one of our buyers that I often pass deals to. This is how we do it too. Now we're at the point where a lot of our deals don't hit the MLS. They don't hit anywhere. We just pass them on to the next guy. Basically, we quietly buy them and quietly resell them. So anyway, the price that I'm looking at now is like $50,000. Less than what we originally offered. Yeah. So that ties into what you might be going on with here. Like, I don't want to offer it. Maybe I don't even want to buy it. There's something that happens. Sometimes, Neil, you look them up and you don't even want to buy it.
With land, you know, we have a whole different show about houses.
Right.
I don't know if you know that.
Right.
So we could talk about land and why this happens.
Okay.
It's teasing you. It's a good story, actually.
Okay. But anyway,
the problem with that house specifically is that it's on a major road. And it's just, so there's no way that I don't know about yet removing mailers that are for a property that's on a major road.
Right. There's one little factor there that you can't scrub out. So anyway, so I was using that as an example to come back with land. Because say you did this like Neil thing. So whatever it is, he maybe offered too much, or maybe he can't get to it. Maybe it doesn't have all the 4 A's.
Yeah, you looked up the property.
Yeah.
The offer came back signed. You looked the property up. You're probably using Parcel Fact or a lot of the due diligence tools that are out there. and it wasn't what you thought.
Maybe you looked at the back taxes and the back taxes owed are more than what's on it.
There's all
kinds of things like that.
For whatever reason, you don't want to buy the property. Usually for us, it's like we can't double our money.
Exactly.
For land. If we can't, for whatever reason, we're not going to be able to immediately double our money. So one of two things happens. We don't tactfully get out. What ends up happening is what Jill's going to do with this house here today, probably in the next hour, is call him back and say, hey, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a major highway going through your front yard.
Right.
And it's much, much harder to sell your property, which is probably why you're talking to us in the first place.
Exactly.
Or one of the reasons. So I'm happy to buy it for about $50,000 less.
Right.
Than what we sent the offer for. So now we're not tactfully getting it out. We're just tactfully, go ahead, Jill, adjusting the price.
Exactly.
Then you win.
Exactly.
Then it wasn't for waste.
And that's usually the end conversation, Neil. So think of, instead of saying, oops, sorry, shred it, goodbye, and hang up fast. You know, you don't want to tick everybody off. But there's a reason why it doesn't appeal to you now. So, and I would call them up and honestly tell them the reason why it doesn't appeal to you. And if it's the location and you can do nothing with it at that price, usually you can do something with everything, but at what price? That's the thing. So that's like what Jack was alluding to. So I would call him back and just say, look, I know I offered $5,000 for this property, right? And they're excited and they want to sell it. It's, you know, 20 acres, who knows where.
They're excited to talk to somebody who's nice on the other end of the phone. I'm telling you.
Or just someone that made an offer.
You overlook this all the time, Jill. You're very pleasant and fun to talk to. And all the other people that are interested in, that are call them to or notify them that they want to buy their land, and they're very far and few in between.
Phony.
Yeah, it's all, or they don't follow through, or they call them once and they never call them back, and all of that. There's no follow through at all. So,
exactly.
Make friends with them, because price will become, after the second or third maybe conversation, secondary. Getting the deal done with you because they like you will become their primary goal.
Mm-hmm. But I would at this point, usually there's some number. You know what? Usually there's some number, but let me back up and say sometimes there is no number. So sometimes you could call them up and go, look, I know I offered you $5,000. I looked at it again, and because of A, B, and C, there's no way I can work with that, and I apologize. Here's what I could do. If you want, I'll take it off your hands for $1,000. I'll roll it into my inventory and see what happens. At one, you know, $1,000, something might come of it. I, either way, I'm okay, you know, kind of thing. And let them make the decision. The other thing you can do, and I've had to do this, there's just some areas now that we had sent out mailers years and years ago that there's still calls that will come in for these smaller subdivisions that we were really excited about back in the day, right? But we're not anymore. And I have a list of properties in this, like certain areas that my team knows that no matter what, we're not even going to buy it. And it's, I feel bad because those people are sometimes calling us, and they're like, I'll give it to you and I don't even want it because the time and the energy
worth the work.
That would go into doing it, it's not even worth it. Even if it only costs $100 to transfer the property, put it in our name, you know, all that good stuff, I need that time and those resources spent on other properties. That's it. And I have to really even politely say, no, I'm so sorry, but no. And sometimes you just have to do that.
But the biggest reason that we are in this situation and we do say, you know what, at any price we can't buy this property,
yep,
is because it's too small. We need to make $10,000 per deal or we just don't do the deal anymore.
Right.
I mean, net.
Exactly.
So we still get from early 2000s and on. We've been sending mailers out since the early 2000s. We get a lot of calls.
Right. I had one. I'm going to tell you one right now, a piece of land that I looked at yesterday that we are going to buy. I don't know if you, but it was that church phone call,
yeah,
that you heard us talking about. So the team was asking me like, hey, this church just wants to give it to us. I'm like, okay. I said, and the first thing is, what's it even worth? So I had my team. I said, send me it back with this information. And they did. I said, you know what? All right. With the comps out there, I mean, we'll do it. We'll take it off their hands. It's worth at least a couple $1,000s, is not $10,000, but a couple $1,000s. So
we're breaking our own rules.
It met my
criteria. I don't know about it.
No, you don't. On that one. It was enough on that one.
And she brings this up on the show, so I can't get mad.
So it's totally fine. And I said, hey, all right, tell them we'll do the... I was even asking, too. I'm like, how much are the recording fees in that county? Okay, then we will do it. I mean, it's really going to be that small of a transaction. I'm like, fine.
Is it a good piece of dirt?
Well, here's what I was going to do. follow me on this. My first thought was, I hate to put it in my name, just to put it in somebody else's name again, turn around. I'm like, I kind of want to give it to somebody, but I don't know who to give it to right now. So that was my thought. But since it's not that much to record, I said, fine.
Well, I can
put it in our name. I'll quickly turn around and give it. I'm going to use it for something. It's all good.
I can get my head around that, though.
Thank you. It's going to be something good.
From donator to donator.
Yeah, totally.
Today's topic is how market data removes the risk in a real estate acquisition. So I've been buying and selling real estate for, I'll tell you, since 1994, really, maybe even earlier. I started out in commercial real estate with long-term care facilities, nursing homes, and assisted living properties. And I'll tell you what, the data set for those properties, even back then, because they were, most of them at the time were Medicare and Medicaid funded, government funded. There's all kinds of data that needed to be collected, a lot like census data around these facilities. So after trying to and failing in apartments, I gravitated toward this because I'm such a data person. And so these data sets were prevalent. And I didn't know it at the time, but what I was doing is removing the risk from actually completing a deal. I would talk to somebody who owns a bunch of buildings or a bunch of properties or operates them in, let's say, the state of Wisconsin. I'm just throwing it out there. And there would invariably be four or five people that are, you know, always want to buy new properties and add them to their operations. And so, and they would put in their order. It's not very different from what happens now, Joe. And so I would contact via mail and via fax back then. This is before email. The owners of these facilities, because I had that data set, unlike apartments back then. And they would say yes or no or maybe. And so it removed the risk. It stopped me from the shotgun approach where you just throw it up on the wall and see what sticks. And it's pushed me back into a rifle approach. And I could literally go through a state like Wisconsin and talk to everybody and put it in a CRM or a database and say, this person doesn't want to sell, this person does. And I talked to him on this date. And I'll circle back around probably a year from now and see if anything's changed. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what we do. Mm-hmm. So it removed the risk. Now, fast forward to 2018 here now, and what Jill and I do, we take a look at a data set, like any given county, let's say, or any, let's take a zip code because it's a smaller data set, and we can see everything in data form, whether there's a mortgage, whether there's back taxes, who if it's owned in an LLC. All these are little clues, and we scrub our data set down based on experience. And we look at that end data set and we say, all right, now I'm going to send them an offer, these property owners, an offer for a price that I know based on my analysis, I'm sure I can sell it for more. And we do it. And with very, very, very predictable results. Every 200 or 300 offers we send out for land, we buy one. And we immediately resell it. And we don't buy it unless we triple check to make sure we can sell it for at least twice what we paid, usually a lot more. And for houses, it's let's just say every 3,000 letters, same thing. We at least make $25,000 on it. Mm-hmm. So that is the closest thing to actually printing money in your basement that I can think of. Mm-hmm. And it's always moves. Data always changes. Data in general gets better. The quality of the data. And I'm talking about assessor data. If you listen to yesterday's show, we talk about our sources of data. We're actually licensed providers now of the best data in the country. So that's how the actual market data coupled with assessor data, and we use those together, for us anyway, and the way that we teach it in our programs, removes virtually all the risk from making a real estate decision. Versus the old way, which is, hey, let's buy a house off of the MLS. I've done this. Clean it all up. Not sure how much it's going to cost to clean it up, but I think I know. I'm not sure how much we can get for it, but I think I know. I'm not sure. Let's just see what happens. Let's throw a few fishing lines in the water and see what happens. I'm a pretty experienced fisherman, and I'll tell you what I don't do. Throw a few lines in the water and see what happens. There's electronics involved.
That's true.
And dive suits and spear guns. And if we're going out fishing, we're bringing some
fish.
You've
been watching the what people have been pulling in for the weeks before. You know what area to go.
There's all kinds of data on the internet about where to fish.
It's true.
So we don't leave a lot to chance.
It's true.
In fact, every single time I've been fishing almost, well, in the last 12 months, it's the thought that we come in when, because we say, you know what, we have enough fish, we got to stop doing this.
Got it.
That is enough for like at least a month to eat.
I love it.
So I hope that was clear. You know, was it clear, Joe?
Mm-hmm. I think so. You know, and you should be, it's pretty easy to look up the numbers and see if your asset is 50% or more less than everything else, you're going to do just fine. You know, that's my...
Well, the beauty for rural vacant land, not so much info lots, but rural vacant land, is that there's almost never any mortgage on it or a lending situation. You can run into it once in a while with deed of trust and things like that, but it's real easy to say for that. But for houses, it says right there, 50%, 40%, 20%, 80%, 100%. 100% is no mortgage.
Exactly.
Once you get to learn how to use the data, and that's the whole key here, to remove... So I'm skipping along the top and telling you what's possible. It doesn't happen in a weekend. You have to learn how to use this data. Even if you are a data person, you have to really dive into it, get your hands real dirty.
You know what?
And learn.
That's a good point to make, because a lot of our really, really, really smart, successful people, members in our group, they are data people, and even they had to sit down and spend some time on this. So if you're not a strong data person, please add another couple weeks on top of that, you know, to really understand this, because you're looking at something totally different.
I got an email from somebody recently, and they said, what's the single biggest reason? They prefaced it by saying, look, you obviously have a collection of extremely intelligent real estate investors in your group. What's the big reason that people, this is somebody that's not in our group, they're thinking about getting in. What's the reason that they don't do it after they pass all the tests and everything? And I said, it's because their life and their kids and their wife and their job and the whole thing just takes over.
Yeah.
It's not because they don't know how to do it, or the data sets are bad, or the system doesn't work. Mm-hmm. If you have any question whether or not this works, by the way, go on to landinvestors.com and ask something like this. Is this a pile of malarkey? It sounds too good to be true. Because I am a data person. I am an engineer or an accountant, and I love this kind of stuff. But it just still seems like what's the catch?
Are you guys consistently,
is the market,
are you all consistently
saturated?
Buying this property so cheap? And the answer is, you'll feel fine. Ask them.
Don't take our word for it.
Exactly.
Everybody will jump in. Because they were all in the same situation you're in. If you're thinking about doing this, even if you just want to buy a house.
Right.
You want to save a bunch of money on your next house.
Right.
You know, or learn how to sell the one that you have.
Or cabin lot or something that you want to do. That's a great, there's a lot of people in our group that do that too. You're right.
If you as a listener have a better way to buy real estate that's cheaper and faster and easier, I would love to hear it. I would love to have you send me an email. Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with a very extremely experienced tech person who developed a zip code based portal that draws. Listen to this. So I'm sure that we have listeners that know all about this. They set up a landing page that draws. So if you go into Google in a certain zip code and say, sell my house fast or sell for cash or anything like that, this works. Mm-hmm. They log in, mm-hmm, and they say, heck yes, I want to sell my house for cash. By the ton, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so great. That, let's say for an argument, you snap your fingers and now you're standing there looking at 100 quote unquote air quotes leads of people that want to sell their house in a zip code.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to do? You have to get online and look up those 100 properties, determine a value,
mm-hmm,
and send them, whether it's email or however, call them back. Probably call them back would be the best. And so now what did you do? You generated a tremendous amount of efficient interest, hats off to you, check, and created a ton of work for yourself and your staff. Mm-hmm. And a certain number of people are going to sell their house, but almost all of them are going to have mortgages or some extenuated circumstance where they don't even know it, but they can't sell their house. They don't have any money in their house.
Right.
Or in their, you know, this is not so much land. So while that, I think that's we're toying with that. And I think it's a viable option, and it will become in the future better and better and better as time goes on.
I know you'll find a way to automate that.
I will, because they won't get through. What we're working on is they won't get through. If once they type their APN in or their address, it'll go through a database and see if it's even a viable deal at all.
Right.
It'll auto-generate something back to them that says no. Mm-hmm. So we are working on that. But for the time being, sending out the mail, I can't. It removes it. I have the highest risk threshold when it comes to money of any person I know. And this passes all my tests.
Cheers.
Just fell asleep. Well, you've done it again. You spent another 20 minutes with us listening to the Land Investor Show. Join us tomorrow for another interesting episode of our show. Mailer pricing with Zillow, Trulia, Redfin, and DataTree algorithms. I'll tell about it all.
Oh, that sounds so exciting.
She's just happy about that.
I am. And we answer your questions. Should you have one, post it on our online community, landinvestors.com. Go there. It's free.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
You didn't hear me yawn.
Was it really that bad?
Did you?
What?
You didn't hear me yawn, did you? I was yawning in my head.
Yeah, I was yawning in my head. You know, I used to practice that in high school.
Oh my gosh, that was great, informative. I really can't add anything to it.
You know, believe it or not, some people find us on the internet and listen to the show to learn stuff. You know, they don't do it just to listen to us, listen, hear about our relationship.
Yes.
That's what Data Week is here.
I get that. This is the Data Week, a.k.a. Stephen Jack Week.
Yeah,
got it.
That's
Thank
true.
You. Hey, share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And while you're at it, please rate us there.
We are Stephen Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.